It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen, because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here.
We are married. We run a website called A Couple Cooks, where I am a writer, Alex is a photographer, and we develop recipes that are healthy, filled with vegetables, and meant to inspire your culinary journey.
More than filled with vegetables, they're filled with joy.
Right. That too. Joy-filled, creative, and delicious recipes. And we also started this podcast so we could talk to you, see what is important to you, and help to inspire your daily journey as we're all learning what it means to cook healthy whole foods together.
And if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love it if you would tell a friend, even pull out their phone and install it in their podcast app. That way they can listen along too. Telling a friend is the best way to share our podcast with all of those listeners out there who don't know yet that they should be listening.
Now, if you were listening to last episode, you may have heard an exciting announcement. We will just give it away anyway, so you don't have to go back and listen. We're that nice. We have a cookbook coming out in February 2018. We are so excited. It's full of 100 recipes that we've developed over the past several months and photographed, and can't wait to share with you. So that was our big news. We've been holding on to it for just a little bit, and we're so excited to be able to talk about it with you now. And if you listened two podcasts ago, you'll remember that we just brought home a beautiful baby boy who we were just trying to get into bed a little bit ago. It was a bit of a struggle.
Usually he's perfectly nice and quiet and ready to go to sleep about this time, but tonight he was crying.
A lot.
A lot.
And we told him we had to record this podcast, but he didn't seem to really grasp the significance.
Apparently
of that
he's yet. Not a listener.
Not yet.
First time listener, long time crier.
Ha. All right. Well, speaking of last episode, we did a giveaway. So we had Laura Wright of the website The First Mess on our last episode. She's so delightful, and it was such fun to catch up with her and learn all about the inspiration behind her book. And we did a little giveaway. We were very happy to see so many of you are excited about her book and cooking with vegetables. And you also, we asked you to share your favorite moments from the podcast. And we see that so many of you are listening and engaged, and we'd love to hear that. So thank you for all your wonderful comments. It sounds like you enjoyed the parts about little Larson, our little baby boy, especially the comment by Alex about all the noises that a baby makes, like the grunts. And you are all just so kind to celebrate with us about our cookbook as well. So thank you for that. And we want to congratulate our winner, Emmy Saleta. Round of applause. Emmy said that she's been following along with our podcast and blog for a few years. And she said, "I've really been inspired by your cooking with Alex as a couple. It's changed the way my husband and I cook as a team. We used to get so frustrated in the kitchen together, and I'm a planner, and he comes in with guns blazing. So we've learned to compromise."
That's pretty great.
Yeah, I loved hearing that. That really made my day. And I'm so glad that just talking about cooking together and sharing those experiences with one another can really be a learning environment. So thank you for saying that, Emmy.
And if you didn't win the cookbook, as in your name's not Emmy, we did steal Laura's fudgy vegan brownies. We should just call them fudgy brownies, because vegan kind of maybe makes you think that you're sacrificing something, but you're not. So we stole that recipe and put it, with her permission, on our website at acouplecooks.com. So go over there and go make it. Sonia, when it comes to cooking, you have two passions. We know you have three passions. One, you like recipes that are accurate when it says how long it takes to make them.
Right. I don't like it when people lie and say it will take 10 minutes and it really takes an hour.
You like healthy vegetable filled recipes.
Yes.
And you like recipes with global inspiration.
Yeah, I would say those are the top three. Yeah.
Passions you have for food.
Yeah.
It's like, right. I know you. So today we're going to focus on number three a bit with our guest.
That's right. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Einat Admoni. She is an Israeli-born chef who's now working in New York City. She has three very successful restaurants, and she's working on a fourth. She also has a best-selling cookbook and is working on a second cookbook. So she's really busy, but we loved that we got the chance to sit down with her to talk about her passion behind food. And she is not one of those chefs who goes home and just eats frozen pizza at the end of the day. She whips up an amazing, incredible meal, and I would really love to try her cooking. So I need to get out there. You need to come with me, Alex, to New York City and try her restaurants. Her cooking sounds incredible. So here she is. Einat Admoni, welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So I was looking over your biography before this interview, and you have done pretty much everything. You're a wife, a mother, an owner of three restaurants in New York City, and you have one cookbook out. You're working on a second cookbook. Wow.
Yes, that's accurate.
We took a look at your first cookbook. It's called Balabusta. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, Balabusta.
Okay, Balabusta. So that means perfect housewife in Yiddish. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that I really enjoyed from the beginning of your cookbook is, I'm going to read it. Like generations of Balabustas before me, I cook from the gut. No measuring cups, no scales. To be a 21st century Balabusta means navigating the pitfalls of life with a courageous heart, a head filled with determination, and a spirit of risk and adventure. I love that. I love that approach to home cooking. Can you tell me a little bit more about your journey?
Yes, absolutely. So basically, I think I start cooking since I'm very, very young. Not professionally, of course, but since I'm like 5 years old, I was helping my mom. I grew up in Israel, very close to Tel Aviv, in a small town called Bnei Brak, for a very religious parent, Jewish, kind of orthodox. And that's mean, I was never been religious, but that's mean that they're preparing Shabbat every week. And Shabbat is a big, very crazy meal on Friday night. Yeah. And we cooking from Thursday evening until Friday afternoon to the all weekend. That's mean we're going to cook for Friday night and Shabbat and Saturday morning.
That's a lot of cooking.
I know, but you, because as a religious person, you're not allowed to light any fire. You're not allowed to cook. So I think the Jews came out with a lot of interesting slow cooking dishes that are very, very fascinating. And that's how I started. So I started actually more like cleaning things and cleaning the house first and then doing all the labor intensive kind of chores that my mom used to give me. And that's mean like taking 2 pounds of Persian rice and clean it. Be sure that each grain don't have any black dots at the end, and kind of crazy stuff, peeling fava bean, kind of breaking down like 2 cases of pomegranate for a very famous pomegranate jam Przewczy used to make. So that's one of the things. But I think slowly she let me cook more and more, and I fall in love with it. And I start going around my neighbors and my aunts and gathering more and more experience. And then I found myself on every path in my life, like being the cook, being the one that always cooking. And I think it came from a very simple place that I can't hear anyone saying I'm hungry. And I always want to feed everybody. Mm-hmm. Until today, even though I have several restaurants and I'm cooking a professionally, you know, manner, I'm still like this, a mama that cook at home for all her friends and family all the time.
So it's all about the people.
it's about the people, and it's I don't know, it's funny because I have a lot of chef friends, and I don't know any of them cook at home, in so massive. It's like a chore for them to cook at home. It's after cooking in the kitchen for so long, I think it's became kind of, I totally understand that. But for me, cooking come from a very different place than most of chefs I know.
Yeah, we know a few chefs too, who mainly eat like Totino's pizzas and French fries for dinner.
Yeah, most of chefs like that. They get so tired, working hard all day. And then come at home and start cooking for friends or for, it's very hard. For me, it's, I think I'm very, very lucky that I never, ever got tired of cooking until today, 20 years in the business. And I still can come home today at 5:30 and start making a nice dinner for my kids. And usually there is always few friends that join in us. And then I have still my Shabbat dinner. So that's one thing that I pick up from my childhood. And I remember I used to hate it because my parents forced me to stay there. I couldn't go out until we finished the dinner. And today, you know, I took it and make it my own. And every Friday I have between 10 to 20 people on my big table. And I make like a crazy meal every Friday.
What would we see on your table at a Shabbat dinner?
So it will usually, lately I start getting tired of doing the same thing. It's not always the same things, but it's kind of the same theme. So I think I'm trying to change it a bit. So you're never going to see pizza on my table or burgers or any. It's always going to be very like a home cooking. So we're always going to start with a fresh challah that I'm going to bake. Two big challah on a table with some spicy fish, like Moroccan fish that call Chaime, and it's with a lot of chilies, and sometimes it's tomato sauce, sometimes with a lot of peppers, but a lot of chili and harissa inside, and sauce that you can dip the sweet challah in inside this spicy sauce. And then it's going to be the main course, which usually it's two different kind of meat. It's going to be chicken and short rib. 2 weeks ago I did a whole roasted duck, so that can happen too. Lamb shank, it can be many different things. And it will be around the Iraqi, Persian, Moroccan, a lot of Arabic food. So it's going to be all around these cultures.
All right, I'm coming to your house next Friday.
I heard that many times, but it's always people said, I'm coming. I said, okay, here's my number, and that's the address, and you're more than welcome. My house is always open. But there is, in the main course or the first course, there is tons of salad. There is at least between 5 to 15 different kind of salads on the table. So it's going to be a lot of different meze. There is always going to be tahini or hummus on the table, roasted pepper salad. Can be green, at least one green with some fun crispy stuff. It's changing all the time. But there is a lot of different vegetable, roasted vegetable, fresh vegetable. Israel is known for making a beautiful vegetable. So that's the dinner. And then I will ask somebody to bring dessert if I don't have time. There is always ice cream, and dessert can change. But
I'm there.
Yeah.
So tell me, I have read that you started cooking for the Israeli military, and then somehow you wound up cooking for Bobby Flay in New York?
Uh-huh. So Israeli military, I was actually, my job was a driver, a pilot's driver in the Air Force. And very fast, they figure out I can cook, and they put me as responsible for the all big meals and important meals for all the generals. And it was right in the middle of the Gulf War. So it was pretty interesting time. So, and then I need to decide what I want to do, and realize that the one thing I can do without getting tired of is cooking. So that's the one thing I can always do. Like, I like a lot of things. I like back then fashion, and I like the whole idea of import-export things. And there is few things that I was interested by, but I knew that if I want to find something that I would never get tired ever, it will be cooking. And so it was a pretty easy decision. I went back to Israel to a culinary school, and right after working in back in the days was the best restaurant in Israel in Tel Aviv. And after that came to New York. My first restaurant was with Bobby Flay at Bolo.
And I'm not up on the NYC scene right now. Is that restaurant still around?
No, Bolo closed like maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. And is that when you started your restaurant?
I started, my first restaurant was Taim in a West Village in 2005. And that was a hole in the wall with 5 stools inside. That was Taim. That's how we started, my husband and myself. So obviously he's running all the businesses and we are partners. And we started Taim. That's how we started. That's our first restaurant. The whole idea of this fast, casual, gourmet falafel have a lot of element of the fine dining world. So even though it was a fast, casual, like we still work with champagne vinegar for our salads and a lot mm-hmm. of like, and we served till today, we served a French fries with saffron aioli. Something that you can see a lot now, but 12 years ago, 11 right. years ago, you couldn't see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was very unique about our falafel. And
so falafel is kind of my love language. I don't know if you know that, but my first really good falafel was in Paris in L'Astu Falafel. Do you know that restaurant?
So a lot of people used to come and said, oh, this is as good as or better. Or like we always been, you know, people always compare us to the place that they know and love and
right.
familiar. So you in Minneapolis, right?
I'm in Indianapolis.
Oh, it's not the same?
No, actually, I grew up in Minneapolis, though. But yeah, we're in Indiana.
Oh, okay. No, because I used to have a friend that worked with me and then took my recipe and opened a Faxi Falafel in Minneapolis.
Oh, I'll have to try that out.
Opened a food truck and then a restaurant, all based on my recipe. So,
oh, fun.
Doing very good over there.
All right, so you started the falafel Taim, and then when did the other restaurants come along?
Well, La Busta came after in 2010. So 5 years after, I opened a real restaurant. Sit down, 55 seats, small restaurant, but beautiful food, all Mediterranean with a lot of Israeli influences, of course. I think it's a very well-known restaurant in the city. And it's doing great. And it's the whole idea of Bella Busta was that the kitchen was painted all pink, but have black tiles. The idea is to show my character is a very feminine restaurant. There is on one wall, there is my aunt Hannah picture. And then under her, there is all the woman chef that colleagues of mine in New York City. So it's a pretty feminine, embracing the feminine side of, you know, and Bella Busta, it's usually, today I would say that anyone can be Bella Busta, but Bella Busta come from like the old grandma that gathering and she's the best cook and gathering all the family and she's creating the whole, you know.
Yeah. So it's a girl power restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. Say that. Yeah.
So you said there's real Israeli cuisine. Do you have an example from your cookbook of something that's quintessential Israeli that we could make at home?
Wow. Tahini. Huge. Eggplant. Anything like eggplant is huge. So the Israeli food, there is few things because it's very tricky. It's still something that try to define himself, you know, like when people ask about Israeli cuisine, it's like always very tricky question. And I've been asked the question, what is Israeli cuisine? Probably a few hundred times. and for me, it's like, it's few things. Because Israeli, it's a little bit tricky because for me, it's also a Jewish cuisine. And Jewish cuisine can come, what people know, this is the thing. In America, what people know about Jewish cuisine, it's Ashkenazi cuisine, which is, how you call it? Matzah ball soup, gefilte mm-hmm. fish, mm-hmm. things like that. That's not it.
Right.
That's a horrible cuisine. It's bland and it's bland and uninteresting, really. So Jewish cuisine, my family came from, my dad was Yemenite, my mom Iranian. So that's much more interesting cuisine. And they do have a specific cuisine just for the Jews. And what is making it different than the Arab that live in the same place is that the Jews had to create dishes that will be good for Shabbat because they couldn't cook in Shabbat.
Right.
That's the difference. But also what is Israeli cuisine, it's about a lot of the amazing ingredients we have over there. We have the most beautiful tomato. Like, I never tried any tomato in this country, like, even resemble to the taste and the sweetness that I can get over there. Mm. Obviously, it's about the temperature and the a lot of different things, but that's the ingredients, the eggplant. We have a beautiful eggplant. We have a seedless eggplant that you will never find it bitter, you know? Mm. I think it's a lot about the ingredients, and it's a lot about to take like what's going on around us. We in the middle of Middle East, you know, a tiny country around all that. And it's like the melting pot of all this culture to bring together. And it's so funny because back in the days, people used to do like dishes that was, you would never see them in restaurant, only in the house. And now like young chefs start bringing the mama cuisine back in a restaurant. So I love to see that. So all this kind of like North Africa cuisine and Iraqi Cuba and all these kind of things that mom and grandma used to do and nobody, you know, you would never see this food in restaurant. Now they're coming back. And it's really nice to see as well.
Yeah, I love that. So is there a specific recipe from your cookbook that would be a good place to start if we wanted to kind of just try it out?
Wow, there is a lot of my mom cuisine, which is Iranian, but not necessarily will be the most typical Israeli. There is a few recipes of interesting tahini that the kind of I'm sure a lot of people did that before, but like a lot of interesting tahini in the book. There is even ceviche, which is so Peruvian. Like we take it a little bit to our side and put fennel and pomegranate and things that are very familiar with Israel.
Right.
So what I'm doing, for example, in Bolognato, I take that's my most Israeli dish, I can say, in Bolognato. So I have this cauliflower in rice flour. It's very, very crispy. And it's on tahini with peanut. So I make a tahini sauce, crush tons of peanuts inside, and then off top, I put bamba, it's look like Cheetos, but much tastier, that made with
like Cheetos.
It's look like, it's a little bit yellow, not orange, and we grew up on bamba, and I believe that bamba kind of helped Israeli not to have peanut allergy, because every mom give a kid, since he's 3 months old, these bamba things.
And it's made out of peanuts.
Yeah, and rice. Okay. And that's why I wrap the cauliflower in rice flour, like a butter, like almost like a tempura. And it's very crispy and delicious. And then the bamba, we just chop it and put on top. It's the most Israeli snack.
That sounds incredible. Now, we were talking before the interview and you mentioned you're working on your second cookbook and you're getting ready to go over to Israel, which I told you is a big bucket list travel place for me. Tell us about that trip.
So I'm going to do some shooting. The new book would be doing this book with, I'm collaborating with a woman named Jana Gore, and she's a good friend of mine and an editor of the best food magazine in Israel. And we decided that in order to make it different, we want to show how we treat vegetables different than anyone else. So they're all going to be, it's not vegetarian cookbook, but going to show how we stretch, even when we do patties with meat, how we stretch the meat when put so much vegetable in each thing. And I think it's very vegetable centric in this book, mostly.
That's a great idea. And when is that due to come out?
Next year, 2018.
How fun.
Yeah.
Well, I could sit here all day and listen to you describe dishes. But last question for you. Do you have any passion projects besides the cookbook that you are on your mind right now?
A lot. It's endless. If I don't do something, I always feel bored. So right now I'm working on an organization that's going to call BIDA. It's businesses embrace a diverse America, and I feel very strongly about what's going on now in this country, and I feel very proud of it. So I want to do something, be active a little or a lot. That's one thing I'm doing now. I'm doing a lot of different talk a lot of different demos and dinners, and I'm working on a new restaurant right now that's called Kishkash. I found a place, and that's going to be a North African Jewish cuisine, and it's called Kishkash, a couscous bar, a small place, one big communal table. This very resembled to how I eat Shabbat dinner.
Cool.
And it's going to be real.
I love that.
I think it's going to be one of the only places in town that doing a real couscous, like steaming for 3 hours. The couscous with all these interesting dishes near to it. Most of the dishes nobody ever heard before, unless you Israeli that grew up with a Moroccan mom or Tripoli, you know, Libyan mom or Algerian, you never heard about these things. It's a very old school dishes. And I'm very, very excited about this project.
You have a lot going on. And I'm so glad that you mentioned diversity, because that's kind of our theme actually for our podcast this year, is just with everything going on in our country. We really believe that learning about food together and eating with people from different cultures can bring people together. And I love that you're into that as well.
Totally. Yeah. All my employees, I think 90% of my employees are immigrant. I'm an immigrant. And I, 2 years ago, I got my citizenship and I got the honoree from Carnegie Foundation as the 40. I make America strong. You know, I was in New York Times of one of the 40 people that got Pride of America.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was a big thing.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I am serious that I want to come to your house on a Friday. So watch out.
Told you, that scared me.
And good luck on your upcoming trip to Israel. I hope your shoots go well. We will be looking for your second cookbook, and we will put the links to all your current cookbook and your other restaurants and your social media in the show notes for this episode, so that all of our listeners can find you there.
All right, let me know when you're in the city.
All right, will do. Thanks again.
Of course, thank you. Bye.
All right, there were a lot of recipes being thrown around there.
There were. What? I love talking to chefs, and when they go into their chef brain is what I call it. Where they're just spouting off recipes. If you remember back, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll remember Rick Bayless was on the show quite a while back, and he went into major chef brain and was just rattling off all these recipes, and I could just sit there for hours and listen.
If you ever need a new Mexican recipe, just call up Rick and he can probably spout off 3 or 4 before you say hello.
Right. So I did find a recipe that kind of exemplified what Chef Edmoni was talking about in her book. She has an eggplant slathered with tahini, lemon, and herb salad. Mm. That sounds really delicious. So I think that's what I would be making next.
Now, homemade tahini?
I believe so. It says tahini sauce, page 218.
All right. Go get Balabusta and go to page 218 for the sauce, and then make this eggplant slathered in tahini. And Balabusta, what did that mean again?
Balabusta is a perfect housewife in Yiddish.
Too bad I don't speak Yiddish, because I could use it on you.
Thanks. No, but I love the meaning behind the word, and we mentioned this in the interview, but how she was able to just learn from such a young age of how to cook from the gut. And she says she doesn't use measuring cups or scales. And that's an amazing place to be, of just having this kind of cook-like intuition in every part of your life.
I also like that she said she started at a young age, kind of on menial tasks, and worked her way up to cooking from the gut.
So maybe with Larson, we can start giving him some menial tasks in the kitchen.
I like that. Start with sweeping the floor and then maybe peeling some potatoes.
And there we go. So I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's so great to be able to get your kids involved. And I hear from so many people across the country talking about different recipes that they make with their kids, and just being able to have that literacy about the kitchen from a young age is so important to future success and being able to feed yourself.
So I know I have lots of memories from a young age of making delicious treats in the kitchen with my family, but they're mostly kind of focused on sweet things. I'd be curious to know if any of you have some cooking traditions with your children that maybe are involved with some healthier, more nutritious things. So if so, let us know. You can find us at A Couple Cooks on Instagram or Twitter, or you can always email us, Alex or Sonia at acouplecooks.com.
That would be Sonia at acouplecooks.com or Alex at acouplecooks.com.
If you want a really brief reply, you should email Alex because he will email you back immediately, but probably not say too much. If you'd like a deep, heartfelt reply, email Sonia at acouplecooks.com and you'll get a beautiful essay maybe 3 or 4 months later.
Okay. And I was able to find the falafel place that Chef Edmoni talked about in Minneapolis. It's called Foxy Falafel.
Now, is that Indianapolis?
No, that was Minneapolis.
Same thing.
Right. And I placed a link to that in the show notes, along with all the information about the Bala Busta cookbook and her 3 restaurants.
On our blog, we have to have a few recipes that are kind of this Middle Eastern, Mediterranean inspired type of thing, right?
We do. I pulled a couple recipes to talk about today centered around falafel, because we talked about the falafel restaurant. And as I mentioned in the interview, the best falafel that we had was together in Paris. We went to a restaurant called La Stew Falafel, and it blew our mind. It was so delicious, and I just remember the sauces running all over my face and down my hands.
And sounds messy. That was 7 years messy. Ago this week.
Oh, oof. And so we wanted to recreate that for the home cook. It is a little bit difficult to deep fry falafel at home, and so we created a baked version. And we made it into a salad. So it's a baked falafel salad bowl.
Wait, this sounds nothing like the falafel we had at La Stew Falafel.
It has some of the same flavors.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And it's made out of chickpeas. In this recipe, we use dried chickpeas and we soak them and then blend them into patties and bake them and put them into a salad. And there's a lovely Greek yogurt, lemony dressing that goes over the top.
I'd eat that.
And then I have another option, which is falafel patties with harissa yogurt.
And harissa, that's not made at home, right? That's
right.
Pre-bought.
It is bought at the store. You should be able to find harissa in the international aisle in your grocery, or you could order it online.
Gotcha. So we have these falafel patties.
Right. You could eat them on a bun or you can eat them just plain. They actually save really well as leftovers, and you can eat them the next day or a couple of days later at room temperature or even cold with the harissa yogurt. They're very tasty.
So that's our show for today. Let us know if you make these delicious and healthy falafel recipes, or maybe you fall back to last episode for those vegan fudgy brownies.
All right, we will talk to you next time. As always, you can find us at acouplecooks.com or on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at acouplecooks.